Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe, where the mission is to normalize the conversation on sexuality while providing you with a real education on sex, intimacy, and relationships. You know, the one you never got in school, from your parents, friends, or the internet. I'm your host, Susan Morgan Taylor. Let's get down to it. Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sex Talk Cafe. I am very excited to introduce my guest today. Nadege is a sex scholar and best-selling author, Making Sexual Empowerment Your New Normal. She's the founder of Pleasure Science, where she teaches you how to kiss shame goodbye, make healing your friend, and create a love life that makes you feel alive and confident. On an average day, you'll find Nadege in her home office, hair in a power ponytail, using her nerd powers for good. Join the pleasure revolution with Nadege over at her Pleasure Science podcast on YouTube. Nadege, welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe.
Hello, the favorite cafe ever, can I just say. I haven't even ordered coffee yet.
But... Oh, hey, well, we're just getting started. We got a lot more than coffee here at this cafe, so. our topic today, and why I think this is going to be just an awesome episode for our listeners, is because we're talking about flirting, the art of flirting. And oh my gosh, what a great topic, because I hear so many people who are like, I can't flirt. I don't know how to flirt. Or I've been married for 20 years. Why would I want to learn how to flirt? And so I think that this is such an important thing, because flirting is really, there's really an art to it. And so I love that you're going to share your nerd wisdom on this topic for us today. But I think first, it'd be really awesome for our listeners to hear a little bit from you. I know I read a very short bio there on you, but maybe we could just start with a little bit about you, how we find you where you are today, and then specifically around flirting. Like, why are you like the go-to woman for this topic?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a little bit about me. So everyone is always like, what is a sex scholar? Or like, how did you, like, what is that story? And I was always the person growing up in my friend group that everyone would talk to about sex, or I would ask questions, or I would be, I just had no shame around this topic. And I, from a very young age, and I'm talking like 11, 12, 13, would, be curious about this in a way that I think was very open-hearted and open-minded, and that was abnormal in the sense that I was the only person people knew where it was like, oh, I could talk to Nadege about that, and like, she won't be judgmental. Mm-hmm. And when I was like growing up, like I said, like I was very young, I would go to the public library and I would rent books on puberty. I like wanted to know what was going on with my body. I was very curious. And I was also a very talkative, very social person. So thinking of flirting and why I'm so passionate about that topic now, I think it's because in a sense, I have always been so connected to people. I love friendship. I love community. And so I became not just a nerd about sex, but a nerd about social behavior and connection. And I was also really awkward as a kid. So I definitely don't want anyone listening to think like, oh, how lucky, she was so charming. I was very, like, very loud, and I would, teachers would get annoyed with me. I was like the class clown. And so as I got older, when I went into high school, I was still super curious about sex. I went to a Catholic high school. I was taught by nuns.
Oh my gosh. What?
And I grew up in Los Angeles, which is like not known for sending kids to a Catholic school taught by nuns.
Yeah. I'm from the Midwest where everybody goes to Catholic school. Luckily I dodged that bullet.
So I was like one of the few who was in a very liberal city and yet in very conservative situations. But I think that's what gave me the superpower for really being curious about this topic, but being loving about sex at the same time. Wow. And so when I got to university, I actually originally wanted to just write stories about like dragons and witches. And I still write those on the side. Like those are for me, they're my pleasure. But when I got to UC Berkeley, I realized I could study sex, and I realized I really wanted to. At that time, I wasn't having orgasms. I was always in a relationship with the same type of toxic person who didn't respect me, who treated me like I was expendable. In fact, when I was in college, the thing that kept happening to me was I would find out I'm the other woman. Oh, it didn't matter the gender. It didn't matter the age. I was always attracting the same situation. Sometimes I wouldn't even know I was the other woman. And oh my so gosh. There was a lot of self-esteem I needed to heal in myself. And then there was a lot of knowledge that I wanted to learn about sex. Like, why am I not having orgasms? Because there wasn't a medical reason that my doctor could figure out why, like so many people. Right.
Right.
And that's kind of how I became a sex scholar. That was 15 years ago, which is wild to even, that was 2012. So that was a while ago. And since then, obviously, over 15 years, have learned so much. But one of the key things that actually comes up again and again, and quite like you said, it doesn't matter if you're dating, single, or you've been with your partner for 20 years, it's this piece on flirting and on human connection. And funnily enough, when I healed my own ability to orgasm, that really started with self-esteem, speaking up, and flirting. Like learning how to be socially secure using my natural strengths.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so that's how we kind of got to this place. And and now I'm a sex scholar, author. You know, it's always so funny to like think about where you were and then where you are now. Like anyone listening, if you're like, I can't even imagine my next five steps forward into sexual empowerment. Right. Like it's a like you'll get there. You just
we
have
all
to
start somewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. And I just hearing your story, we all needed an adage like when we were in high school, middle school. You know, like how cool would it have been if everyone had a version of you to go to? Who do we ask these questions to? And you were actually like curious about it, and interested in it. But at the same time, like you were not like sex was not an enjoyable activity for you.
No.
And that was what drove your desire to figure it out. Right? Like totally. You were in enough pain where you're like, fuck this. Like, I've got to figure, I can relate to that. It's a lot of, you know, those of you who know my story, similar kind of thing. Like, I just wanted something different so bad.
Yeah.
And we, you know, when there's that kind of driver, it's like, you're willing to do almost like, what does it take? What do I have to learn? What do I have to study? What do I have to try
so
I can have
a different
experience? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So this, you know, I know we're going to talk about flirting here, but I think what's also so relevant is this part of the talent you had with orgasm. And what you're saying is that your ability to flirt or learning how to flirt was somehow related to your overcoming that challenge. So maybe we can talk about that, because that is a challenge a lot of women more so have out there. And I'd love to hear what your revolution was on that as you discovered your journey through that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was confidence. So if you are flirting well, you're confident. You're not charming. You're not hitting it right every time. You're not always hearing the word yes. You're just confident, right? And like, you know, even thinking about the science of flirting, if this I find so fascinating, and it always helps people when I explain this. And this was a huge like breakthrough for me in figuring out how to be confident, because I'd say the two things I struggled with, I couldn't orgasm and I didn't feel cool. Yeah. And so like flirting kind of helped with both of those. And actually feeling cool in the sense of like, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't need anyone to validate that externally now, but I did before. Mm-hmm. That was one of the reasons I couldn't orgasm. I viewed sex as this transaction where if I give you my body, you'll give me affection or validation. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's love, but sometimes I didn't want love. Sometimes I just wanted the hottest person in the room to take me home, because I just wanted to feel like I was hot. I was chosen. And so I'd give that person sex with no, like, this is how you please me. This is what I like. Maybe I didn't even like that person. Like, they opened up their mouth and were a total a-hole.
Wow.
But they were physically attractive. I wanted to feel like I want, you know, and that was how I was approaching sex. And so part of not being able to orgasm was all of my priorities were, how do I become cool and liked? Oh, sex is a pathway for that. And so much of the things that we see in the media validate that idea. And so I would be having sex. I wouldn't be talking about anything that I liked. I didn't even know how to do that at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also very insecure. So not flirting or connecting in a way that was empowering for me, but using flirting as a transaction too. Flirting was almost like the opener of the transaction. Well, sex was the closer of the transaction.
Sure.
Right?
But you must have been good at it, because if you were getting, like, you're using it sort of as a manipulation to like get this thing in order to validate your self-esteem. But however, it sounds like you were having some success with that. So you must have already been good. Something you were doing was working. You were already good at flirting somehow.
What I was good at was approaching people.
Okay, like just walking up and like,
and that's
hi.
One of the flirt styles, actually.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So a little psychology of flirting, like I gave that back, a little bit of that context, so that way we can see why this one piece of the psychology of flirting was so empowering for me. And I share it with people because people also find it empowering. Humans flirt for two different psychological reasons. We either flirt for connection or we flirt for entertainment. It's actually very normal for humans to just flirt with each other and not have any agenda behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I'll talk to so many people, and I'm sure you do too, where it's like, I was connecting with someone and they didn't get my number. What's wrong? Maybe they were flirting for entertainment. Like, maybe they're partnered. Maybe they're not interested, or maybe they dropped the ball. But
I'm fascinated about that one. And do you find, I'm so curious about that one. Do you find there's a gendered thing in that? Does it tend to be more dominant on like one? And if we're talking on the binary right now, I know there's lots of different ideas around gender out there, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole today. But do you find that it tends to be more gendered? Like, who flirts for entertainment more?
I don't think so. I don't find that there's everybody flirts for entertainment at some point or another. I think any gender can be manipulative. If we're looking at actual like studies that I've seen, women cheat just as much as men. Women are just more strategic. Men, if we're talking about another podcast, straight men, they're not, they're more likely to get caught. You're not as smooth as you might think. But all the genders cheat, all the genders flirt for entertainment. I would say what it actually comes down more so is personality types. And less about gender. We're so quick to say like men do this, women do this, queer people do this, trans people do this. Sure. No, you have your needs. Your needs are going to influence what your behavior is. And that's why you need to become really aware of your sexual needs, because your behavior is being influenced by needs that you have. And if you're not aware of them, then, you know, you're going to be behaving in all of these ways. But yeah, no, I wouldn't say that, you know, for example, men flirt for entertainment more than women. I think we all do it.
We
just
do.
As often.
But it's about your personality type. So are some personality. And so what model are we using when we talk about personality type? Because there's a lot out there. I love the Enneagram. That's one of my favorites. But there's a lot of other ones out there, right? So when we say like what personality types tend to flirt more than others, what are we talking about? What model are we using?
For me, I would actually want to use the flirt styles in that sense. So every single, there's 10 different ways that humans flirt. These are called the flirt styles. And some flirt styles are more likely than others to flirt for entertainment. For example, my flirt style is the confident flirt style, which is the one that will approach anybody. It doesn't mean that you actually are confident. It doesn't mean that you actually are charming. It just means that you are bold. If you see it, you like it, you'll go and approach. And that was me, very bold. Like you were saying earlier, well, it sounds like you got a lot of sex. It sounds like I did. It wasn't because I was charming. It was because I was bold. I had more numbers. So I would go out and I would literally go, I don't care, man, woman, whatever, especially at that time period of my life, like late teens, early 20s, where I was like, all my friends are having sex. They all say it's amazing. I'm not having a good time. I'm going to fix this by just trying to go out and meet and, you know, and so, but then when I actually, for anyone listening, you could go to pleasurescience.com/flirt, take the flirt quiz to discover your flirt style.
But I was just going to say, you have a quiz on this. I want to take it. I was on your website before we jumped on the call. That sounds so cool. And
I know
fun.
You have to take
pleasurescience.com/flirt. Is that it? Okay. Everyone go there. It will of course tell people at the end where to find you and all this cool stuff. But it looks so fun. I want to know what my flirt style is, because I bet a lot of people listening are like, I don't have a style. I have no game, but everybody does. Is that what you're saying? Or we all have a style.
Everyone thinks that. Let me tell you why. Yeah. Because of the 10 flirt styles, only two are ever shown in mainstream media. And that's the confident flirt going after the mysterious flirt. And I don't even need to tell you, you already know what I'm talking about, right? Like, you didn't even take the flirt quiz. You don't know the flirt styles. You know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
That's how prevalent. And with flirting, just like sex, these are social behaviors. We learn them through watching others and talking to other people. So when we see in TV and media, and even social media, the same trope where there's someone who's mysterious and hard to get, and there's someone who's bold and ambitious, and that bold person goes after the mysterious person, then we think the only two ways to flirt are either to be mysterious or to be bold. And these are 2 of 10. So actually the reason why everyone thinks I have no game is because you are one of the other 8 flirt styles. Maybe you're a subtle flirt style. This is the flirt style that loves friendship. I want to be your friend. I want to ask you deep questions. Tell me your trauma. Most people aren't going to think familiar. That that's flirting. That's yeah, right. But and then there's so many others. You know, there's the playful flirt style. This is someone who wants to make you laugh and they're playful and they're playing with you. But this could also be someone who's very nonverbal. Maybe they like poke you or sit next to you or they send you funny memes, right? And they're flirting with you, but you're just laughing, thinking, what a good friend. The reason we think people aren't flirting with us or the reason we think we can't flirt is because no one has taught us what flirting actually is.
And then we're basing
it off of these fake things.
Sure. And again, media really has not done us a good service in a lot of ways when it comes to sexuality in general. And the same is true with flirting as what you're saying. I totally see that now that you're saying it. And I think what I'm hearing, I think we need to talk about what flirting is, because as I'm hearing you talk, what I'm hearing is these are just ways that we connect. And I think, I think we hear the word flirt and immediately think, oh, I don't want to flirt because that means I have to have sex with this person. It means I'm going to end up in bed with this person. Yeah. It means I'm going to invite that kind of energy towards myself. But really what you're speaking to when you say flirting, this is about how we connect. How do we create connection? And we have different ways that we do that. So say more about that from your perspective and your definition of flirting.
Yeah, I'd say my definition of flirting, it's connection or entertainment. We can't downplay or ignore or try to change that part of human behavior. And like, you know, when you think about like flirting as entertainment, that could be as simple as like you ordered a coffee and the barista is super cute. So you two, you know, have a little just, and you know what I'm talking about, like everyone listening, that little fun, like moment of just sexual tension. And then you walk away, you just flirted for entertainment. That's how simple it was, right? And so for me, flirting, the definition of flirting is connection and entertaining ourselves and others. And it's okay to flirt for entertainment. Some personality types are going to do that more than other people. Like again, thinking of the flirt styles, the playful flirt can be a little bit like that, right? Like going and flirting for entertainment. But again, anybody can be. But I'd say that is what I would define flirting as. It's like this very broad, fun thing that we can do where we're playing with other people, connecting with other people, and that we really need to take the pressure away from flirting of like, oh, if I flirt, it means I'm supposed to have sex with this person. Right. Or, oh, if I flirt, like, and I didn't ask for her number, I'm a bad guy. I just let her. And it's like, you're allowed to like see a cutie and flirt and then walk away if that's what you want. And people who are in a relationship, I think that's another piece here where it's like there's a lot of fear around flirting, because on the one end it's like, oh, if you're in a relationship, a monogamous relationship, you're not flirting with anybody else, that's cheating, that's bad, you can't do that. Well, again, this is why we need to normalize flirting as entertainment. And in fact, I always love this reframe of like, how sexy is it if your partner is desired by other people but comes home and chooses you?
Yeah,
that's the hottest thing. We don't want to train our partners to dull their sparkle and to stop flirting with their own life.
Right.
We want to talk and create like, oh, what's okay, what isn't okay, like, you know. And then there's also
That could be a tough conversation, because how do you draw, like, where are the boundaries on that? I mean, every couple would have to decide for themselves if you're in a monogamous situation. I think rarely do we think of like that as really a topic. Well, a lot of couples don't even ever have the conversation around the boundaries of what do they consider cheating, right? Because that's so unique to every couple, regardless of what your relationship style is, but more so in monogamous relationships. And I think the boundaries on flirting, like, how would one even have that conversation? Because we don't even understand what flirting is and what it even means. And so I think that could be a lot of gray area for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. And the way that you navigate through the gray area is through communication and action, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not by hiding things. It's like, let's acknowledge that, like, we're human. We can go, we will flirt. Like, I'm not even saying, like, you can. The fact of the matter is you will, because you're a human being interacting with other human beings, and that's normal and that's fine. And so, like you said, it depends on everybody's relationship. If we're talking about monogamy, and I'll strictly speak for myself here, so that way people can kind of say, okay, that's what her boundaries are. Maybe I can get inspo. For me, so I'm an extremely friendly person, and I speak at events and travel the world all the time for work. So I am constantly around people, and I'm constantly around people who will potentially flirt with me simply because of what I do for work. And so when I'm dating someone, or when I'm partnered with someone, I always like let them know, like, if you're with me, you gotta have enough self-confidence and also be fully self-expressed enough to date me. So that way you're confident in yourself, but if something bothers you, you also speak up. Right. So that's one of my boundaries. I wanna know when something doesn't feel good for you because I can't read your mind.
Right.
And that's one of them. Another boundary that I personally have, especially when it comes to flirting, because I similarly like attracts like, so I'll often attract people who are friendly like I am. In fact, I was recently dating this guy, this very handsome guy, and now we're just friends. We realized we're better as friends, but we were both, people liked us. People would come up to us. And there were a few times where we were at a big party. And at one point I looked across the room and I could tell there was a woman who was really interested in him and flirting with him. And I could also see, like, I'm like, he feels good because this woman is seeing how hot he is. That feels good for him. I can see that. And then, you know, we catch eyes across the room and he walks straight back over to me. That's my other boundary. It's like, if we're out together, I don't want you to dull your sparkle, but I want to make sure that I feel like I am there with you. I am your priority.
Right.
And if I don't feel like that, it's also my responsibility to say, hey, let's check in. We were at this party. I noticed you flirting with this girl and you didn't come over to me, let's say. Yeah. You know, he didn't do what he had done to make me feel secure. And then we can talk about that, right? Yeah. And I always like to remind people, like, boundaries are not here to punish others or tell people how to behave. You're teaching someone how to love you correctly. My boundary for we're in a public place, but you always make me feel like a priority, is so that I can feel loved and respected and in turn show up as my best self to this relationship.
I love that. I love that. It's such a great example. So listeners, take heed and adjust as according,
for everyone, right?
Adjust as is right for you. But I think you bring up a nice point in this too, that I want to speak to or have a conversation about here. There's sort of a cost. There's a cost to shutting down this part of ourselves, right? Just like we might shut down our sexuality around shame or fear. The same is true with flirting, because in a sense, we are playing with the same energy. This is life force energy that we're talking about.
Exactly.
Yes. So if we're saying you can't flirt, or I don't flirt, I shouldn't flirt, or if I flirt, I'm cheating on my partner. We're sort of siphoning off an aspect of our essence, of our radiance, of our expression that is really beautiful. It's part of our humanness, like you said. So there's really a cost to not embodying our ability to flirt, our natural tendency as humans to want to connect and want to kind of have a little bit of that playfulness expressed through the life force energy.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think for anyone listening who's like, I do not feel secure enough for my partner to be flirting, I am not okay with that. Like, you know, you think on your own boundaries, but if you don't feel secure enough to let your partner be themselves, then there's either self-work, self-esteem work to do there that you need to do, or questioning if your partner is trustworthy. Maybe you don't feel secure because your partner has shown you that they're not the most trustworthy, or things don't add up. You know, we can't be afraid to leave. Because another thing of, if you want flirting to feel good, you can't be afraid to stand up for yourself or leave a situation when it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
You know, I was just talking with someone about cheating, and they were like, how do I make sure I never get cheated on? And I always love this question, because I feel like people ask it all the time, and they always expect me to say, like, there is no way. And I'm like, no, there's 100% a way to make sure you never get cheated on. in a monogamous relationship. Shout out to poly people, though, and open relationships and non-monogamy, because y'all are amazing. But if we're talking about monogamy, and also this goes back to like that idea of flirting and what is too much or not, people will not cheat on you if you show them that when you disrespect them, you will leave and you're not afraid to leave. This right. is how you prevent cheating. It's yeah. having the self-esteem, and it really starts with the self-esteem to say, absolutely. Oh, you talk over me and make me feel bad. I'm going to share this with you. And if you don't change, I'm not going to punish you for it, but I am going to leave. It's like sure. going into relationships with that posture of self-respect. And so by the thinking of cheating or thinking of flirting in a way that feels violating to the connection, those things are not going to happen if you are already establishing the foundation in your relationship yes. that like there's a level of respect that is required.
Right. Well, and let me just say, you know, yeah. even if you are in a different, a not, you know, non-monogamous relationship style, cheating can still happen even in those relationships.
Oh, 100%. Totally. I'm glad you said that.
It's exactly with what you're yeah. speaking to. That is still absolutely possible. So no matter what your relationship style is, having that self-respect to hold your own limits and know your own boundaries and, right. and to not allow, not to self-violate. I think that happens. Can yeah. be a slippery slope where we just kind of, oh, just let that slide. And next thing you know, you're way down in the muck with that. And things aren't going yeah. well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, but yeah, and thinking of, you know, thinking of flirting, and I'm so glad you said that though about the non-monogamy piece, because it's true. Cheating can happen in any relationship, and like open or non-monogamous relationships tend to have more communication than monogamous relationships. But like, yeah, all of the same things can occur. And I've been in both polyamorous and monogamous relationships, and I have seen the good, bad, and ugly in both, you know?
Yes, I do. So I think also in this situation is that we're, you know, we're sort of speaking to how does one, let's just say you're in a long-term monogamous relationship. And this idea of flirting is something that I think a lot of couples tend to think it's something that happens at the beginning of a relationship.
Right.
And once you're together, you know, that's over, right? You know, the honeymoon's over, the dating part is over, now we're together and life becomes boring and now it's sexless probably, right? possibly. But yeah. we forget that flirting is really a skill, and it's something that can be revived, it can be learned. And I think especially in a long-term relationship, can you speak to that? Because I would think in the yeah. scenario we're just speaking to, like if my partner were off flirting with others and not engaging that energy with me in our long-term relationship, yeah, I'd be pissed. I'd be like, you know, like, hey, like, so let's talk about that for a minute. In long-term relationships, why is it important to bring this part back online if it's gone offline? And how would a couple even do that if things have gotten a little stale and stagnant?
Yeah. Well, one, I mean, I think you're right. We're like the relationship escalator. If we like literally look at that, it's like we have all of these ideas that once we get to a certain point or we feel secure, dating and flirting kind of falls off. And the second that that falls off, a lot of other erotic energy is going to fall off too. Mm-hmm. And so if we're thinking of like a long-term couple and how to bring flirting back in, I mean, not to sound like a broken record, but definitely take the flirt quiz so you can know what your flirt style is, so you know how you flirt. Because the first step is really realizing you do flirt, you have a flirt style. What is it? What is my flirt style? What is my partner's flirt style? Because so often we think we're not flirting with each other. We don't know how to get back to flirting because we're like, oh, okay, I've been together with my love for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Let's start flirting. I think flirting is you look sexy. And now I'm going to tell you that every day, but I'm actually a nonverbal person. And that is now me being yeah. inauthentic. Right. So yes, I'm flirting. But I'm not being authentic to who I really am. So step one, if you're in a long-term relationship, is figuring out how you both naturally flirt with each other. What does that yeah. look like? Is it through physical touch? Because that's a flirt style. Is it through jokes? That's another flirt style. Is it through friendship, deep questions? Is it through compliments? So there's all these different ways. Once you figure out what your flirt style is and what your lover's flirt style is, you now have a sort of foundation of like, for example, if your lover jokes with you about something and you realize, oh, they're the playful flirt, that joking is how that, now all of a sudden your wife is like, oh, he's flirting with me by like saying the stupid joke. Like that used to annoy me, but now I know this is a bid for connection.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, that would be sort of the therapy term for it, or the clinical term, right?
The bid for connection, the bid for care, totally.
Connection. And I think to be able to notice that in our relationships is so important, because I think what they say, like 80% of them are missed or something. And
good,
healthy relationships, we miss them. And oh my gosh, like, wow. Be good. That'd be a great spot to work on anybody listening in long-term relationship. Like, start to pay more attention. When is your partner attempting to connect with you? And all the ways that we tend to block those bids for connection, either judging it. I think people can get judgmental about flirting. Or I've seen this happen with some couples that I've worked with. Partner flirts and it's a total turnoff.
Yeah.
To her. Yeah, right? Like they say something that's kind of like, oh, it was kind of like you were a teenager or something just now, and it was really not hot, like didn't really land. How do you deal with that? You know, what if that's the case? Their flirt styles aren't compatible.
Well, if your flirt styles, so when it comes to the flirt styles, you actually have two. You have a dominant and a supporting flirt style. Mm. And so, for example, I am a confident flirt. I will go up to anybody. But I'm also a playful flirt. That's my supporting flirt style. So I'll also joke or try to make people laugh, and they kind of work together. And so with people who are having like disconnection in their flirt styles, or maybe they're not as compatible, the good news there is, since you actually really do have two flirt styles, you can kind of, and you, when you become conscious of it, it changes the game. And so you can become conscious of this and try to navigate through it. I also say, again, listen, breakups aren't a bad thing. I'm very pro breakup. If it's not working, like, figure out, talk about it, create weekly check-ins, you know, figure out how long you want to stay. But a good relationship is a relationship that you choose to be in. Mm-hmm. It's not one that you feel like you have to stay in.
And it's not
but
stagnant.
But I'd say,
not stagnant, ideally. It's
not stagnant.
And growing.
Yeah, but if you feel like your flirt styles are not the most compatible, or the mere act of flirting isn't getting you there, then, I mean, again, that's just like step one. Step two is really to create as much novelty in your relationship as you can. Mm-hmm. So when we're looking at long-term relationships that are, they're like, let's say it's boring for everyone, for lack of a better term right now. You want to do anything you can to create novelty. Maybe you two go on a little vacation together. Maybe if it's even just like one night at a nice hotel, like a staycation. Maybe you go to nice dinners. Maybe you do a painting class together, do activities, do all different types of things. And I would say, like, when we're looking at long-term relationships, you really want to look at what's your flirt style, what's your erotic blueprint, the archetype that you show up to in the bedroom, and what is your love language. We want to kind of use all three of these together. So you'll have, okay, that's the way I flirt. I'm confident. Let's say I'm the bold flirt style, but then my love language is quality time. And then my erotic blueprint is the energetic type, where it's like, oh, I like sexual tension to be built. We need to kind of work with as much as we can, because flirting is just one piece of the puzzle. So if you kind of know these different elements, and when I work with couples, those are like the things, like the first thing I do is I'm like, who are you? How are you both showing up here? So we can kind of work to your strengths. But then the next thing is really just like, how do we create novelty? Flirting, one reason why flirting creates life force energy, erotic energy, is because it creates novelty. You're doing new things. Oh, I'm talking to this new person. It's bringing this out of me. I'm sharing information. Like, it feels new. It feels fresh.
Oh, that's
interesting. Also, yeah, it's like, it's also why we have this assumption, oh, it's going to fall off at a certain point. But it doesn't have to if you're creating a whole ecosystem for your love.
Yeah.
And a part of that ecosystem is like, is novelty. It's one of the biggest newness,
right?
Like, creating something to be. You could learn a language with your lover. You could join, like, you and your lover can have a book club. I also, this is another thing, I want people to stop referring to each other as, oh, that's my spouse, husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend. That's your lover.
Yeah.
How different does the energy change when it's like, oh, that's my lover. I'm in love with my lover. I'm doing this with, like, do you refer to this person in that way? How can you improve, right? It's like, it's flirting is sort of like this entry level place that we can go into that can really help. But it's all these other pieces of the puzzle too.
I like like the sort of reframing. And also there was a time in my life where I had actual like statuses. So like lover was a little bit not quite as committed as like boyfriend, you know, like.
Right.
And then there was just something below lover, you know. But I like that. And I get where you're going with it and having truly, right. Like there's more playfulness too, I think. And we can have different ways of referring to our beloved and the one that we, you know, spend our time with and keeping that connection alive. So let me shift gears just slightly. I mean, we're still going to talk about flirting here, but so you've traveled the world.
Yeah.
And I think that different cultures have different relationships with this flirting topic, right? And I'd love to get your perspective on what you have found in terms of our culture here, maybe in America versus, let's say, somewhere like Brazil. Or even Europe. Like, what are the differences culturally in the relationship with flirting and the role that flirting plays in different cultures? What have you seen?
Oh, my God. I've seen so many things. It's so interesting. I'd say in Europe, not including the UK, but if we're thinking France, Germany, Spain, Portugal, a lot of flirting and dating is not as structured. It looks more like, oh, we're hanging out. And we're having sex, and if we still like each other, we're just going to keep hanging out. And if we don't, we're going to kind of fall off. It's like you're going in the flow of it. And I'm actually French American. I'm a French citizen and an American citizen. So I've lived in France. I've seen it myself. And my dad, who's an immigrant and lives in America, he has said so many times, it is so weird how the Americans do things here with the dating. Oh, you go to dinner and then you do this. Why you do it? You know, like, and it's so true. It's like in Europe, the norm is, oh, maybe I met you through friends and then I see you again and we go to coffee and we do. It's not labeled. And there isn't these specific milestones. The UK is a little bit different. It's a little bit more Americanized. And in America, or the Americas, Canada too, we can be quite like this, where we're like, oh, okay, we like each other, but he didn't ask me to go to dinner, so I guess we're not dating, you know? Or we're like, we had sex, but then we didn't get breakfast after. So this is just casual. It's like we use all of these things to try to figure out what's going on,
the
because
status, it's like trying to kind of put it into a box much more quickly. I wonder why that is. Like, where do you think that? And it's interesting that England is sort of similar in that regard. And we have a lot, obviously, you know, we kind of broke off from Britain, but we have a lot of multicultural influences in America as well.
Yeah.
But like, what is going on there and why? Like, I'm so curious, like, what are the influences in that? Do you think? What's your theory on that?
That's such a good question. I mean, a part of it, I think, goes back to the puritanical foundation that the United States specifically was created upon, where when we left Europe, when we left the United Kingdom, we left in this way of we're better than them because we're more pious. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? It means rules. It means structure.
Yeah.
It means everything is outlined. But when we're thinking of modern day dating and how we've taken all of those things in, I think it really does kind of go back to these historical roots, because Europe had a lot longer to question or normalize those kind of things and almost break away from them, which is interesting because there are some ways where I find Americans are way more sex positive than, you know, people in Europe. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Specifically in the way that we dress.
Okay.
So we can dress way more provocatively. And I'll see this in the United Kingdom too, although they have worse weather. So they might be
worse
up.
Food. No offense if you're British out there.
but they'll be way more covered up than we are. It's very common for Americans to show way more skin, but be less sexual.
Yeah.
And then in Europe, it's way more common for someone to be way more covered up, but more sexually fluid. They might have sex on the first date. And of course, these are just like westernized. Like if we're even going to go broader, you know, if we're thinking in different countries in Asia, there's a lot of different norms around marriage that I think really influences flirting in different cultures. And there's a lot more of a like status with marriage too, and an expectation. And we still have that in the United States. But I would say, like, in terms of flirting and connection, things that I see that are differently, done. I think in India, there's a big emphasis on marriage, on staying with your family. This is also true in a lot of Latin American countries or in a lot of immigrants that I see in the United States, where it's like, it's normal for kids to stay with their parents until they're married. And, and that's, and like, for some folks to be a woman in her 30s and be single and move out of her family's house can actually be more of a taboo than staying in her family's house and dating like an American guy, for example, who's like, why are you still 30 at your parents' house? And she's like, because if I were to move out, I'm a whore. Wow. I'm a slut.
Oh my goodness.
And of course, like, we're going very broad, people, and everything is nuanced and every family is specific, you know, and these are like kind of broad stereotypes, but we do see these different kind of trends across different cultures. So I would say flirting looks very different in Asia, looks very different in Japan, in Korea, in China. It's going to be a lot more reserved. It's going to be a lot more polite, which is actually a flirt style. The polite flirt is
a flirt style.
Nope. And the traditional flirt. So when I'm telling you, when people say I can't flirt, I'm like, are you just a polite flirt style? And your way of flirting is opening the door for the person that you think is cute. And he has no idea, because like, why would he? Right? Like, he's just thinking, oh, what a nice person. Open the door for me. You know? And so, but when we come to these other cultures, what we see is just a complete and different way of navigating connection, and also how to protect yourself as you navigate connection. Because culturally, you know, sex can mean so many different things about your worth. And so that's like another piece to it. I'd say if you're coming from a background that's either religious or has a very deep cultural tradition, you'll probably develop your natural, authentic flirt style later in life. After you've gotten married, after you've hit these milestones that were meant to be hit in a structured way, you might be in your 50s. And in fact, I work with a lot of folks who are post-divorce, so they're in their 50s or 60s, and they're like, oh, well, I did all the things I was supposed to do. Now I kind of want more in this set. And it's like, oh, well, you're no longer, like, you're no longer 20 and thinking, well, I have to get married by a certain time or else I can't move out of my family's house.
Right.
Like, you're no longer operating in those systems.
Right.
Now you can kind of more authentically be like, wait, how do I connect with people?
Yeah.
So we do have these, you know, tradition and culture really influences what we're allowed to do, but that doesn't mean we're being authentic to ourselves. And I also just want to say, like, it's, you know, it's okay to, like, it's okay if your life did not give you the ability to be authentically sexual yet. Like, I'm queer myself. I know a lot of gay people, even in this day and age, who are not out of the closet because it is not safe. And I always say the same thing. It's okay. You know, like, you shouldn't have to sacrifice your whole life and family in order to be able to, like, flirt at the grocery store, right? Like, if that's your, like, it is a balance, and life doesn't make mistakes. You're on your journey, however that is meant to unfold. But yeah, I do notice, depending on different cultures, it's later in life where people are able to be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to be a bold flirt now. That's how I always wanted to. I'm going to go up to anybody, you know? And so we see kind of those things shift as we age and change, and again, self-esteem, it's confidence, let me tell you, is like the, or I think self-esteem is a better word for it, because confidence, you can appear confident and not be confident.
That was going to say, confidence can be sort of an overlay for insecurity or arrogance, right? It's more arrogance.
True confidence.
Yeah, true confidence really has a level of authenticity and even vulnerability. I think people don't understand that about confidence, right? I want to be confident. But really, there's a real deep sense of vulnerability with confidence as well.
Totally. Totally.
What about, like, so I think different cultures as well have different relationships with flirting in general. And I don't know if this is more of an American thing. I had a friend once many years ago who had traveled and lived all over the world, many different cultures. And every time he'd come back to the States, he would always complain that the women here are really closed off to flirting. Like, they're just so uptight. And I wonder if you have seen that. And I do, I mean, I've seen that. Like, and I've probably been that woman at some time in my life, like, oh my gosh, like, oh, he just said that about me. And oh my, I'm so offended. Yeah. You know, like people get so offended by the flirt. I'm not like that anymore, you know, because it's
no,
I've
seen that too.
Like, yeah, it's pretty cool, you know, like, like getting catcalled on the street when I look like total shit. And I'm like, really? Like this? Like that literally happened to me once. Like walking on, I was literally like had my hair, but I was like, looked like crap that day, you know, wearing like just some ugly dress. And like, I got catcalled and I laughed so hard. I think I turned around and I like looked at the guys in the pickup truck. I'm like, this? And they're like, yeah. But I think there's a lot of women that would have been like, oh my gosh, you know, like getting all offended by it. So can just speak to that. And like, what, why is that? What's going on in our psychology that we're so offended that somebody would flirt? Maybe it's the sexualization of it or being feeling objectified for some people.
I think that in those it's a rare moment where women can be angry and it can be validated. So what I've seen, I actually have kind of a radical opinion about this. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of women, especially straight women, are devoting too much energy to noticing all the ways men are doing it wrong.
Oh, sure. Of course.
And I think that women are also so hurt, but we don't have a place to share our anger. And so when we find these appropriate places, like, oh, I can get really angry about catcalling, justifiably so, because sometimes it is inappropriate and unwarranted. Yeah. And then other times it's just like you said, it's like, oh, really today? Well, listen, I thought I looked like shit, so maybe thank you. But when we find a place where we can actually be angry, it's really cathartic. And I think that we can all of a sudden put anger for so many different things that we're feeling into that one place. I remember I worked with this woman who was single and dating. And one time she'd hung out with an ex, and then, and they had been friends for a while, like hadn't been dating for a while, were in the friendship. And then he starts, the vibe kind of changed. They're at like coffee or something. The vibe kind of changed. He started flirting with her. And then he asked her if she wanted to go home with him. And she got so offended. Like in our session, she was like, I couldn't, but how dare he and all of, and I was just like, okay, let's go neutral for a second. And let's see that like this person who you have had sex with before and had a relationship before and have a friendship with wanted to open the opportunity for sex to occur. And you are allowed to say no. Right. Now, if he had, you know, been creepy after the no, get angry. But I see a lot of women get prematurely angry because one, I think we're allowed to be angry in this way. And so, oh good. Like that's that, like we finally have a place to be angry. Yeah. And then two, I think a lot of us don't know how to deal with the objectification and the patriarchy and what it is like to be a woman,
right,
especially if you're attracted to men as a woman. Yeah. Like how is it to walk through this world being attracted to the thing that oppresses you and being attracted to the thing that doesn't realize it's oppressive? Because men are not monsters. They are not out. Like, I work with so many men. Every time I work with another man in my coaching practice, it's like the most beautiful gift. Aww. Because I get all of these men who are like, I just want to have a girlfriend. I just want to fall in love. I just want, but then they'll make like one wrong joke. I actually had a male client, this happened to him, the sweetest peach. All he wanted was a girlfriend, but he had, so this is another flirt style. He was the teasing flirt. It's where you're mean to people.
That yeah, could backfire. That could backfire from time to time.
Yeah. That can, listen, the teasing flirt style is not for everybody, but he was a teasing flirt. So he had this really crass sense of humor. And I would tell him, I'm like, you know, my goal as a coach, I don't want to change who you are. I want you to find the person who's right for you. Cause there's going to be a girl out there who's going to laugh at your sense of humor. But with him, I was like, your sense of humor tends to offend the women you're dating. You need to get really good at apologizing and communicating that this is how you are and you are not trying to hurt someone's feelings. Mm-hmm. It's actually the opposite. You're trying. And so it's like working with men, I've really seen how so many men are not monsters. Most of them are not. They don't understand patriarchy. They don't understand how they're complicit in this system that is so violating. And by the way, patriarchy hurts men, all the men listening. Yeah. Like when we say fuck the patriarchy, it's not fuck men, because patriarchy hurts you too. The reason why suicide is most prominent amongst men and loneliness is an epidemic amongst men is because of patriarchy. But that's
conversation. I just want to also say my stance on that is that it's the toxic patriarchy and the distorted, because matriarchies can also be toxic and highly damaging. I think we forget that, and we also tend to hear patriarchy and we think men, and like I think we need to do a big fat reframe on that, and that's obviously a topic for another conversation, but I just need to throw that in there.
No, and you're so right, because one of my academic mentors, who is a lesbian and is like very active in social justice, will be in feminist spaces and she'll tell people, patriarchy isn't evil, we're just doing it incorrectly. You know, we need both matriarchy and we need the masculine and the feminine. We need all of these things.
And not the toxic and distorted forms, but the actual true feminine and masculine. Yeah, and it's just so messed up out there. And doesn't matter what gender you are. It's not about gender. But anyway.
But to answer your question, why women feel this way, I really feel like it roots down to these things. It's like we have this big toxic patriarchy. Yeah. How on earth do we, no one's teaching you how to deal with that.
Well, and how to deal with it in an empowered way. And I think that's what you're speaking to in this, how we got on this topic here. It's about, can we use our voice and just say, I mean, that's flattering. That person's attracted to you. They want to take you home and have sex. I mean, that could really be a compliment, but I think that there are so many, as women, we're not taught how to be empowered in our voice.
Yeah.
And also how to have a real genuine respect for men. And I think you're right, because of the whole oppression and all the stuff that gets weeded into that. And I think also in that scenario, there's also a sense of, there's a maybe a feeling of safety that could have been violated for that woman in that scenario. I think that can happen when all of a sudden sex comes, you know, we're in the friend zone, the heart zone, suddenly, oh, now you're involving your cock in my vagina, like, whoa, like that's such a vulnerable spot.
It's like, oh, I don't feel safe anymore, and now that I don't feel safe, I'm gonna, you
get
know,
pissed, get angry
and get angry. And I think getting angry is a good step, by the way, to anybody listening. Like, getting angry is a good step. Anger is your friend. Anger is an intelligent emotion. And I would say, like, the real medicine is to start speaking up. Like, with that client and her ex-boyfriend, I was like, well, what did you say when your ex asked you, you know, flirted with you and asked you for sex? And she kind of said that she, like, abruptly left. She, like, shot down. And then she just left.
Yeah,
and
like, I'm like, shamed him.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Ouch. And I was like, listen, like, one, you used your voice, so I'm proud of you. Because it's hard to use your voice. Two, now in the next time you have a situation like this, how do we do it like a little bit better?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, honor your anger, speak up for yourself. It's okay if you're imperfect, but if it's worthwhile to you, not every situation is going to be worthwhile, but if it's worthwhile, like, return back to that person and say, hey, this was why I got a little upset about that. Mm. And can we talk about it? You know, absolutely. And like figure out a way forward. But I would say, like, you know, it's counterintuitive in a sense, but it's like, honor your anger and speak. Like, if you're a woman who wants to figure out how to start healing this, you got to start speaking up for yourself. You're going to probably be imperfect and maybe cause a little conflict or tension, but over time you'll get better at it.
Well, and the anger is a cover up for the fear in this scenario, potentially. I mean, we're not talking, she's not here with us right now, but my assumption is that, you know, instead of the, wow, I feel unsafe right now, which is what was actually probably true or something like that. Yeah. It's just the, how dare, you know, the shame. We shame and then we get angry and, you know, righteously walk out of the room, which is fine. But not going to be a generative response if someone listening is working on healing.
Yeah.
Healing patterns of shame and trying to become more empowered with, being flirtatious and in flirting spaces.
And I think that's what a lot of men feel, where they're like, well, I want to be
shut
flirty,
down and
but
shamed.
Then it's
dangerous.
I don't want to be shamed, or I don't want to be, you know, rejected.
Yes.
And all of, you know, and like, what's sad is with men, they don't really talk to each other about sex, but women can. And it's like, and again, like, you know, but just all of these nuances. But I will say, I mean, flirting is still worth your time. Like, we're talking about all that. But you know what? It's important. Like, it just goes to show, like, this is, I think, why so many people are afraid of flirting, even though it's such a fun word and thing to do in theory. It feels like, oh, I opened Pandora's box. And now, you know, right? And now we're all, and listen, you want to open Pandora's box because if you want to have good sex, you have to navigate through all of the situations that are going to show you what your boundaries are, show you how to talk up and speak up, right? Like, it's like, you just, you won't get any positive results without opening up Pandora's box and just flirting and figuring it out.
Yeah. So we need to open Pandora's box. And what I think will help our listeners with this, and I'm going to go do it when I get off this call. I am signing up for this quiz, this flirting quiz. I want to know my flirting style. So everyone listening,
you have to message me and let me know what you are.
I can't wait to find out. And let's just reiterate, that's at pleasurescience.com/flirt. Is that the right URL?
Okay. Pleasurescience.com/flirt.
Yeah, because I think if we understood that, like, then it might be a little less scary out there. Like, oh, it's not so daunting. I can bring this back online. I can play with this and I can understand, that didn't land. And maybe that's why. And I can, try some other approaches.
Like, for example, if you could discover you're the flirting flirt, the polite flirt style, and now now you can tell people, hey, when I do these things, I'm flirting with you. Cause that's the other piece. If you have a flirt style that, like, no one can tell that you're flirting, now you know what it looks like when you're flirting. You can share that with someone.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like,
And there's so much. I mean, it's time flew by.
This is so fun. We're going to do a part two at some point here. But we'll open Pandora. Everyone go open Pandora's box. We're going to close the Sex Talk Cafe box for today because we need to wrap things up. But Nadej, it's been a total delight having you. I love this conversation, love this topic. And I just want to give you a minute to let our listeners know where they can find you and how they can connect with you.
Absolutely. So I own a company called Pleasure Science, which is much easier than Googling and figuring out how to spell Nadej. So if you want to work with me or say hi, you can find me at Pleasure Science on Instagram and TikTok. Shoot me a DM. I would love to hear from you. Check out our YouTube channel where we have the Pleasure Science podcast, but also a ton of really cool behind the scenes videos of what it's like to be a sex scholar. I take you with me to the Porn Awards. I take you with me to the Human Rights Campaign Los Angeles dinner that just happened. Lots of fun stuff. And then you can go to pleasurescience.com if you want to learn more about, again, like, you know, flirting, how to work with me as a coach, all of that great stuff. And thank you so much, Susan, for having me, because this conversation was so fun. And I swear we can geek out. Like, you and I were like, wait, we can't go on that tangent. We can't go on that.
I know. Okay. Well, there will be another conversation. Yes, there will be another conversation sometime soon. And we will go down maybe more than one. Yeah, we'll go down some of these really fun tangents and rabbit holes. Well, Nadej, again, thank you so much for being my guest today on the Sex Talk Cafe.
You're so welcome.
Thank you for joining me for the Sex Talk Cafe. Please be sure to leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. And if you're ready to discover the 3 secrets to deepening connection, enhancing pleasure, and expanding your orgasmic potential, then be sure to grab your copy of the Pleasure Keys ebook at pleasurekeys.com. To learn more about my private coaching, couples retreats, and other offerings, be sure to connect with me at pathwaytopleasure.com or find me on social media at Susan Morgan Taylor. Thank you again so much for joining me today for the Sex Talk Cafe.